A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, I'm Alan Cumming, and welcome to My Shelves. My shelves are sort of a museum of my life. I like to keep things from my travels that are, to me anyway, the very essence of the experiences I've had. Sort of portals, if you will, to a specific time and place. And the inspiration for stories and memories and musings. Here's my invitation to the White House, framed from President and Mrs. Clinton for a cocktail party, which I wasn't able to attend because I missed my plane. Here's my actual Etch-a-Sketch, my magic Etch-a-Sketch from my childhood. It still works. And today, I'm talking to the legend that is Lulu.
People like Ray Charles. You know the nighttime, night and day is the right time to be with the one you love. That's the kind of thing I liked.
Yes.
Welcome, bienvenue. Welcome.
Lulu grew up in Glasgow in Scotland, and she shot to fame in 1964 with the song Shout when it hit the charts, and she was only 15 years old at the time. She went on to have loads and loads of hits in the UK charts. And in America, she had a number one hit with To Sir With Love, the theme tune of the film with the same name, starring Sidney Poitier, in which she also acted. In the late 60s and up until 1975, she had her own TV show on British television. That's what I always remember, like these Saturday night shows of Lulu and all these guests and dancers and sketches and everything. It was just, when I was growing up, I was obsessed with Lulu. She won the Eurovision Song Contest in 1969 with a song called Boom Bang A Bang. We'll hear more about that later. It's not her favourite song. In 1974, she recorded the title song for the James Bond film The Man With The Golden Gun. And she also covered two David Bowie songs that year, The Man Who Sold The World and Watch That Man. In the 90s, she became a songwriter, as we'll hear. She wrote I Don't Want to Fight, written with her brother, which Tina Turner recorded and became a huge hit. And that same year, she also paired up with the boy band Take That for the song Relight My Fire. She went on to tour with Take That, and she even appeared in the BBC television series Absolutely Fabulous. She is absolutely fabulous. Lulu is a national treasure, and I am just so honoured to be able to speak to her today. And the thing that I am going to talk to her about that I've taken down from my shelves is an old record, a 45 vinyl record. It's in a little paper holder which says Columbia Records on it. And it is a song that I was obsessed with when I was a little boy. And this is the actual copy I've had all these years. It's called I'm a Tiger by Lulu. So, oh, this is so exciting. Here she is. Lulu, I have in front of me...
Yes, Alan.
I have in front of me a thing I took off my shelves. It's a 45. It's one of your 45s. It's I'm a Tiger. And it's I've got the record, the original record that I had when I was a little boy. And it came out in 1968. It must have been in my parents' collection. On Columbia Records, a Mickey Most production. And it's so funny because I realised that Mickey Most, to me, was he was a judge on New Faces, which was like the sort of, you know, The Voice or Idol, one of those kind of shows.
Equivalent. Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's how I recognise him. I didn't realise that he... So he produced your music, did he, in those times?
There's a story. I mean, there was a story to everything.
There's always a story, Lulu.
Depends which part of it you want to tell.
I want the juiciest. I want the world leader gossip.
I'll be very discerning. But Mickey was called a hit maker. Mickey was a record producer, and that's why he was on that TV show that is as a judge.
Yes.
You know, he was a kind of a Simon Cowell type person.
Right, yeah.
But anyway, Mickey produced. Who did he produce before I went with him? Because I originally started with Decca Records and was on the same label as the Rolling Stones, and Tom Jones and I had the same producer, Peter Sullivan.
Wow.
But then I went, where did I go then? Oh, then Mickey, who was making a lot of hits. He made hits. He produced records for Hermits.
Oh, yeah.
He got big American hits. He produced The Animals. I mean, talk about chalk and cheese.
Yeah.
So he had a very wide, what do you call it when you have
spectrum?
Wide spectrum is a good word. It's a good word. It's not the one I was looking for. Yeah, this my age, I have to wait for what's to come.
Oh, please.
I go, wait a minute. I'll tell you his name in a minute. Just if you can hold on. Oh, we'll just talk about something else. And then in the middle of a conversation, the name comes. But anyway, spectrum is a very, he had a wide spectrum of people that he produced, artists. Oh. And so my manager thought it would be great because he was the hot number at the moment. So I went with Mickey. And the I'm a Tiger song, you know who it was? It was written by, probably you don't know him because you're too young.
It was written by R. Scott and M. Wilde, it says here on the record.
Marty Wilde was a Marty big Wilde. Rock and roll star, English rock and roll star.
Oh, is he Kim Wilde's dad?
He's Kim Wilde's dad.
Ah, right.
So when Mickey brought me that song, and most songs he brought me were kind of like that song. And that song, it was a hit. Everything he did with me was a hit. Were kind of, I don't really have the proper words. I don't think I've ever found the words that I could describe, but they were sort of light. That's being
right.
Kind, and that's being gentle and being evasive, in fact, because I didn't like it. Right. So he convinced me this was a hit. And my manager looked at me and she said, well, that's what you need. You need hits. So I'm like, I'm looking at them both and I'm very young. And I thought, okay. And, you know, to go, I'm a tiger. That was it, right?
Yes, that's it.
It was a big, big hit.
Huge.
But really and truly, it was huge. But really and truly, I wanted to sing, walk me out in the morning dew, my honey.
Wow.
Don't. Walk me out in the morning, you know.
Yeah, right.
Bluesy, rocky. No, I'm a tiger. I'm not. So
it felt a bit girly and sort of pop-tarty.
A bit lightweight.
Right.
I thought I was a big fat mama, you know. I felt like I was should sing the big bluesy.
Well, that's what was interesting
rocky.
About you, because you sort of sounded like a big fat mama, but you were like
this wee lassie.
Not on that one, no. And how hilarious that this is the song, that why I took this and why this record is special to me is that my mum always says that when I was a little boy, you know, it's so embarrassing when your mum gets asked questions about you, but she used to always say, you know, did you notice that Alan wanted to be a performer? And he goes, well, she always says, well, and I go, oh, here it comes. I'm a tiger. She goes, he always used to like to get a hairbrush and sing I'm a Tiger by Lulu. I'm like, shut up, mom. But I remember that. I was obsessed with that song.
Well, how old were you?
Seven? No, like in nine. I mean, when it must have been later because I would only be I was only born in 1960, but I was only three in 1968. So
exactly. Well, that's kind of where I'm going
right.
with this. That's exactly who I feel that's who it would appeal to. And you know that to be objective about get away from me, and you know analyzing myself and my career and my life. You know, when you look at music, the music business, and your hit records, pop records. Any era, there are songs that are a bit like nursery rhymes and they're great and they're fun.
Gosh, that's interesting. Yeah. When you did I'm a Tiger, was that sort of a diversion? You were taking a diversion to more sort of mainstream pop? Because when like your first burst onto the scene, you were sort of like this rockery, kind of raucous sort of person, weren't you? You didn't,
I had a voice that didn't really... That belied my what I looked like, I think, yeah.
Because you were how old were you when Shout came out? Like 16?
I recorded it when I was 14, and it actually, because of the Scottish educational laws, I was not allowed to leave school until I was 15. So therefore, he was not allowed to go. I wasn't allowed to work.
Wow.
So there was no point in them putting the record out until I could run around doing promo on it.
So how come did you come to be 14 years old and having a record deal? How did that happen?
Well, I blame it all on the Beatles, or actually, to be serious, there's no blame. I owe it to the Beatles. The Beatles really sort of paved the way for so many acts, so many musicians, so many artists in this country, worldwide too, but mainly in this country. Because before that, I had always really admired and people like Ray Charles. You know the night and day is the right time to be with the one you love. That's the kind of thing I liked.
Yes.
And that was his hit, you know, and he had other stuff that were bluesy that my father used to say, well, that man knows stop moaning. because it's the way he sang. The blues is all about moaning. Kind of moaning a bit, you know.
Yeah.
But so back to the Beatles, they really, Alan, opened the gates.
Yeah.
And
what do you mean for people, sort of like for working class
for musicians.
People? And is that what you mean? Do you mean musicians
in
general?
For musicians. Well, actually, there's many. That's a very good question, because I think there are many ways they opened the gates and many ways they changed the world.
Yeah.
They instigated a revolution.
Mm.
I mean, you know, politically, it was bubbling under. But for pop culture, they changed the world. Once they started to become successful and the whole world went crazy apeshit for them.
Yes.
What happened was that everyone was looking for new talent and looking for new talent from where they came.
Right.
And, you know, not just Liverpool. They looked at Scotland. They looked, you know, Birmingham. They looked at Newcastle. You know, they looked everywhere.
So
Manchester,
it was like
everywhere.
It was a move away from everything being London-centric in Britain.
And but certainly the sort of spread, the arms spread out to reach out and find talent and bring them to London, to be fair.
Right.
Stretch out and find the hidden talent that was obviously in this country. And so I, you know, can thank them. And I think anybody who had success from this country at that point should be grateful to the Beatles, because they opened the doors. Brian Epstein and the Beatles.
Right.
So I used to sing in a band. I mean, from the age of 12 or 13, I was singing. I mean, from five, I was in competitions. My mother would put me in for competitions. But I was in actually, I think from maybe from 11, 10 or 11, I sang with an accordion band.
Oh, my gosh, did you really?
Sunday concerts, yeah.
Wow.
I used to, there was a part in the middle where they'd break up. The huge accordion band would break into a four-piece and with a drummer. And I would come on and sing a couple of pop songs that were in the charts.
Uh-huh. With accordion backup. So from there, hilarious.
But with one accordion at that point and a guitar and maybe a keyboard and drums. But then a man came to my mother and asked my mother if I would join his son's band. He had a band called the Bell Rocks. And I was then, 12 or 13? Because the actual accordion band was my mother's cousin's band.
So that's
how I got in.
Right, right.
And everyone used to talk about me in my area where I lived, that, you know, I would sing. Everybody would ask me to sing because I could always sing. And I was always, I'd rather sing than do anything else.
Right.
So dodge school as much as possible.
When you were in this band, I mean, it was the other people in the band were grown-ups. And you were just a wee girl. But I mean, were you sort of...
I'd sticky out frocks.
Hilarious. But were you, I mean, I don't mean to be sort of rude, but were you like a developed sort of child? Did you look older than you were?
No, I didn't.
You looked like a wee lassie.
I looked like a wee lassie with a sticky out frock with this. Like I said, my look never really went parallel with the sound of my voice. And in fact, later on, that became an issue. And I can see now looking back that it was difficult for record companies with me because I didn't look how I sounded. And, you know, I also discovered that Christina Aguilera had a similar issue with herself, that they didn't want her to sing the song she wanted to sing. But, you know, it's that's history. And
it's also a thing about women, isn't it? Like women musicians getting kind of pushed into this sort of little cutesy pop tart sort of mold. Happens all the time.
Absolutely. I mean, it happens to women in every area of business.
Yes, yes. The patriarchy at work, Lulu.
Yeah, and, you know, often, I mean, even one of my brightest associates and friends, brilliant businesswoman, you know, made millions in business. We talk about this kind of thing all the time. And, you know, she said, She's like me. She's small, but she doesn't have a big voice like me. She has a little voice. And she said she always has to have a man with her until people got to know who she was.
Right.
Because they really wouldn't. And when the man was in the room, even though she fed the man all the information, but if she tried to talk, they wouldn't look at her. They'd look at him.
Yeah, yeah.
They'd ask a question to him. So in my situation, because I was young and because I didn't feel I had the weight to really argue with producers and record companies.
Well, it must have been so daunting. You're just a little teenager.
I would go off and cry.
Yeah. Oh, would you?
I would cry. Exactly. I was very young. And my manager, Marion, was brilliant. I mean, she fought my corner so much. But it was hard because she wasn't a hardened music person. She was just a housewife who happened to be a trained coloratura soprano.
Uh-huh.
But
where was she from? Glasgow?
No, she was from London.
So how did she come to be your manager when she was just a housewife?
Was a housewife, yeah, I know what you're saying. It is a strange, we felt it was a very karmic relationship that we had, how we came together and I mean, it was quite an incredible relationship. She was like a surrogate mother and a business partner and a guide, mentor, etc. She had a brother who was opening discotheques. That's how she'd say it.
I love that.
He's opening discotheques in Glasgow. And he met Lulu. And anyway, so Tony, I went in for this competition. By then I was like 13 and a half. Uh-huh. And the Daily Express were having a big competition for talent. Lots of the bands, the local bands, and I was by then in a band, in a rock and roll band, singing in a club, a jive club, on Sundays, sometimes Tuesday nights. And so I was discovered there by Tony Gordon. Tony Gordon, by the by,
yes,
was Boy George's manager, founder Boy George.
Wow. So he found you, he was in Glasgow and he came to the club where you were singing. And that was how you
thought that. And then, you know, I won this competition, or I came second to this competition, one or the other. And he definitely decided that he and another guy should manage me. And then he decided, once I got my contract with Decca, he decided he couldn't possibly manage a 15-year-old girl. So he asked his sister to come to the recording.
Oh, it was his sister. Why did he feel he couldn't?
Well, first of all, he had discotheque. Starling.
Oh, I see.
And
right.
He had these disco clubs, you know, and he was very busy in that, and he felt awkward.
Right.
I was a girl. I was a little girl, you know. And his sister was he was very close to his sister. His sister was kind of bored. Her three children were at the Lycée Français, and she had a big house in Holland Park, and she wanted to find something to do with her life. And he said, "Come to the studio. Maybe you can help me manage this kid."
And because, that was then. That's how you just
had
a great
music.
You had a great connection, and then she became
incredible.
Your manager.
Incredible!
Wow.
I mean, it was kind of destiny, you know.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Sam Walker. I've spent the last few months talking to this guy.
I'm a hunter. It's what I do.
He's called KC.
Our rules of engagement are pretty simple. If we have to pull a trigger on one person, they're all going to go.
He's an American vigilante.
And there is one of the biggest men I've ever seen, and he's got a knife in his hand.
He rescues kidnapped children.
There's no feeling in the world like putting a child back in the arms of its parents.
By any means necessary.
Well, it's ugly. You want me to make sure I don't hurt anybody?
He scares me.
And he kind of looked at me, and I said, I swear to God, I said, if you do anything other than what I told you to do, I said, I'm going to kill you right here.
And he might scare you.
About got tears in your eyes right now just thinking about that, don't you?
Download the podcast, American Vigilante.
Download American Vigilante.
Out now.
Now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
My heart and soul is in the blues,
right,
and rock and roll. That's where my heart and soul is. That's where I live. That's where I come from. And as a child, you know, As a really small child, I used to listen to Ray Charles. I used to listen to gospel. Anything that's gospel-based, and, you know, most of the Motown stuff was.
Yeah.
So that's where I lean. And it's not to say that they're not commercial. It's like for me to go on and sing, and even on Boom Bang A Bang, if I watch that film, if my eyes don't go up to my head 5,000 times, who did I think I was? A goddamn Cupid doll? You know what I mean? But that was encouraged. And in part of me was a child, naive and all the rest of it. Mm. But part of me was an R&B mama.
Right.
You know,
right.
Was that's where. And so there was a contradiction there all the time.
But did you feel pressure to do that?
Yes, I did.
From whom? Like your manager or the record company or what?
From most people that were older than me that I felt they didn't get me. They didn't, and I would never have said those words, they don't get me. Mm. But it's like, I don't like these. I didn't have the language to express myself.
Yeah.
I don't have much of language today, but I'm much more than I used to because now I could say this doesn't feel authentic.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't authentic to me. So, and of course, I'm an artist. I'm not, I'm not a puppet, you know. So
yeah. Yeah.
It was difficult.
Do you,
but you know, I can't complain because I've lasted all these years.
Yes.
And I've also had, because I've had this longevity, I've also been able to be more philosophical about the things that didn't work, because the ones who felt like me and did what I did, like Janis Joplin, she's dead.
Right. Yeah, there's that.
I had an older manager and she was a mother. If I'd have been with some cool young management company,
who knows
where I would have ended up. So I'm very philosophical about it.
And it's not like you haven't had your rock out phases.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm doing it now. Yeah. I'm still doing it.
It's crazy. I was looking at you like, You do duetted with David Bowie. Do you say Bowie or Bowie? Yeah.
I asked him the same question because in Glasgow, we had some cleaners that were called Bowies.
Yeah.
So I said, is it Bowie or is it Bowie? He said, whatever you like.
Oh,
most people say Bowie.
Yeah. And people in America always say Bowie. But yeah, I used to say David Bowie all the time. But I think
suit yourself.
I love that he didn't mind. But yeah, you did stuff with him, and then latterly more like those things with Take That and all these different. And then I love how much of a songwriter you are. Like one of my favorite songs of yours is that one. There's a fair moon in the sky. Da, 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 da.
That's great.
I love that song.
That was the Tina hit.
That was the Tina Turner hit. I think it's great. Yeah. And I think it's so interesting that you, as an artist, you've been in all these different phases and different genres, and then you've written for other people. You seem really sort of selfless in that way.
Oh, that's kind. Well, I would, thank you. I like the way you put it. What happened was, and a lot of people said to me, why didn't you keep that for yourself? Why didn't you do that? I said, look, my brother and I figured it out. They were making a big, big, big movie about her. They were spending gazillions of dollars. She hadn't had a hit in America for like 8 years. They were going to push this thing, and the campaign was going to get her much more attention than mine would.
Right.
I know right. Because you have the film company and you have the record company. So we figured out it wasn't really actually, if you'd have thought about it yourself, you would say, and I was at that point just writing. That was the first song.
Was it really? The first song you'd written?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Good start, Lulu.
So, yeah. So can you see where that was a fantastic, really lucky moment for me to get someone like Tina to sing. And you know, when we did the demo, I hear that when she, well, it's kind of not true of everybody, but happens to a lot of artists that the producer will not correct your way of singing, but guide you to phrase differently. And certainly in the edit, they use the best vocal you did,
right?
You know, where your phrasing is slightly better in one than it is in the other.
Yeah.
Actually, a lot of people don't even sing on the note, so they auto-tune every note. But Tina, of course, you know, we know how great Tina is. Her phrasing and the way she sang it was a copy of how I did the demo. So the whole thing was such a big boost for my ego, but really for my confidence more than anything.
Absolutely.
Because I hadn't written before. So can you see how great that was?
Yeah, I didn't know that was the first song you'd ever written.
Yes, it was. I was not a songwriter. I'd probably put in a few lines on I think my brother wrote for Three Dog Night, and I did a few lines in the song, but I didn't consider myself a songwriter. And funnily enough, Alan, I don't really consider myself a fully fledged songwriter because I started so late and I like to collaborate. I don't like to do it on my own. I enjoy the collaboration. I also don't like to be a solo singer. I like to have my band.
Right, yeah.
I always think my brother's the real songwriter because he's done that since he practically was born and doesn't stop. Every day he writes.
Does he really?
I don't. I only write if there's a project.
Right.
I'm going to send you some stuff we did recently.
Oh, I'd love that.
Over the COVID thing.
I'd love that.
Yeah.
Because that's such a revelation to me. I didn't realize that's, because I knew that was a big thing for you, and I knew that, you know, that Tina had recorded, but I love your recording of it. But I just didn't know that it was your first one. That's so fascinating.
But can you see why that was such a great?
Oh my God!
It was
a
lucky move that we. I mean, I kind of, when I'm in a certain state of mind, I say, well, that was me with my business. Well, it was me with my business hat on.
Right, totally. But also, what a lovely I love Tina Turner. She's such a nice person. She sang the song Goldeneye for the James Bond film. I was in that.
Yes.
And I met at the premiere. I met her. She was such a sweetheart. And I remember in the lineup, we're waiting to go on stage for the world premiere. And I was between her and Judi Dench waiting to go on the thing. I was like, oh my God, what the hell did this happen? And she had I saw she had, gold nail varnish on her toes. And I was like, oh, I like, I was just trying to make questions. I said, what do you say to Tina Turner? I was so sort of starstruck. So I said, oh, I love your nail varnish, Tina. On your toe, and she went, oh well, I have golden toes, and then she closed her eyes and she had gold eyeshadow, and she goes, and golden eyes. I thought, and then at the party, I took my mum and everything to the party, and I looked over at one point, and there was my mum and Tina Turner and Judi Dench all standing together chatting. It was one of these crazy moments.
Oh, that's such a wonderful memory.
It really was. And my mum's always like, it was one time I was in a hotel in LA and I called my mum and said, oh, I hear Tina Turner's in this hotel. She goes, send her my love. My wee mum thinks I'm just talking to Tina Turner all the time.
But she would have been thrilled if you just said, oh, hi, Tina. You remember me? My mum said so.
Totally. She would have loved it. Lily, this is hilarious, I'm going to tell you now, because you won't remember this, but we met in 1982 because, so I was 17, Yeah, I was 17. It was in Manchester. And what happened was, I was at the time, it was before, just before I went to drama school, I was working for DC Thompson's as a sub-editor on this magazine. And I went with my editor, who's called Harry. He took me on a trip to Manchester to meet writers or something. We went to Manchester. And we were in the Piccadilly Hotel next to the Piccadilly radio station. And we were checking in and I saw you going past and I was like, oh my God, it's Lulu. And my editor said, go and ask her for an interview. I was like, what? He goes, that's what you have to do. You're a journalist and you're a sub-editor. You've got to go and do this. So go and ask her. So I went up to you and went, hi, Lulu. I looked like a child. I mean, I was 17, but I looked probably 13. And I was being taken along by my editor to sort of, you know, show me the ropes. And I went up and asked you and you said, you know, yes, I'm here. I think you were doing like a radio tour. Is that what you do? A radio tour of radio stations with a new record or something?
I was probably promoting something. Yeah.
And you said, and you were so cute because I was Scottish. You were asking me where I was from and we had a little chat. And then, so the next day at like 4 o'clock or something, I had to meet you in the lobby and I was going to interview you and I was so nervous. And what was hilarious was, remember in the 80s that boys... men wore those shoes with a little tassel. Well, they still do, I suppose, little tassels on the shoe.
Yeah.
So I had a pair of those and we sat down. There was really low chairs and you sat down and I sat down. I crossed my legs and right in front of my face, I could see that my tassels were missing off my shoes. They must have fallen off. And I remember just thinking, oh my God, Lulu's going to see I don't have any tassels. Oh my God. So I'm so glad you don't remember because it's haunted me for decades.
Isn't that incredible? Well, you know what and it's a very vague thing. It's a moment that sticks out in my mind. It's there, but it's very foggy.
Isn't it funny when you get prompted?
That's such a sweet story. Oh, my God. But we were actually getting, and I think we were well oiled. That's why I only remember some of it. Was it the arts club?
Oh, yes. What was that for? Was it an after party of something?
I don't know. I can't remember. I think I was so drunk.
Wait, it wasn't a thing for the Scissor Sisters. Was it? We were at a Scissor Sisters party one time.
Could have been.
And I remember having a lovely chat with you. And actually, Grant, my husband, said that there was something we were at one time and I had to go and get my photo taken or something like that. And he was standing there. And it was like with a lot of famous people. And it's an interesting thing, you know, when you're, I think it's a really great thing when you are with someone and you see, and you're famous and they're not, and you see how people react to you and how they sometimes don't see the non-famous person in a situation like that.
Yes.
And it's not a criticism. It's just like they're sort of blinded by the thing. And so they don't mean to be exclusive or rude, but they sometimes are. And he's an artist. He's not kind of bothered by all that, but he notices it. And it's made me actually much more conscious of it too.
And yes, of course.
But he said that you were so lovely because it was like a situation where he was left and he was the sort of the person people didn't know who he was. And then and he said that you came over and said, who are you? And have a seat and blah, blah. And you were just really lovely and made a real point of making him feel comfortable. So, yes.
Yeah,
so
that's really nice.
It is really nice. And you're really nice.
I'm really pleased with myself.
Yeah,
I'm
no, it's good. It's a good quality. But it's a sort of Scottish thing, don't you think? We always try to make people feel
it is very
relaxed,
welcoming.
And, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and you're no better than anybody else. So include everybody.
No, absolutely. Yes. What are you up to these days, Lulu?
Well, all of a sudden it's gone crazy. I think when I spoke to you before, I was telling you that there was not a lot going on. But I'm actually going to do, funnily enough, we mentioned him just before, I'm doing 4 outdoor concerts with Boy George.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's good. So I'm doing gigs, back doing gigs.
Gigging.
I have been writing.
Good.
I have been, I told you I was working with an acting coach and I have been for 3 years now. Love, 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 love. And that's what I've done during the COVID. I hurt my back also doing too much gardening.
Oh,
sweeping,
really?
Actually, sweeping the leaves. And I've moved house.
Oh.
And so I've got the gigs with George. I have a bunch of festivals that I'm going to do. I'm doing, what else am I doing? Well, I'm doing gigs. I'm back working and my band, I'm going to rehearse with my band. My MD lives in Florida. He's coming in I'm going into the studio to do a couple of things that my brother and I have written. And then in the autumn, winter, I'm doing a tour with Jules Holland.
Wow. Oh, God. Look, yeah. Now, I don't, like, you're a lady in your
72.
Lily, look at you, and you're gigging away. It's
I love
amazing.
It. Oh, I hope I drop. I go off stage and then say, oh, I'm feeling a wee bit tired, and then goodbye.
That would be
That's
nice.
What I hope to die that way.
Yeah.
That would be nice. Wouldn't that be nice?
It would be lovely.
I'm putting that out there.
That's nice. Yeah. Also, I just remembered that I think we met another time when Jordan, your son, went a long, long time ago. He went out with this lovely girl called Rachel, who was a model who was... I was going out with my ex fiance actually, Saffron. She'd been a model, and they were models together. And
that's where I met you with Saffron. That was the club.
That was when we were at the Arts Club. Yes.
Was it with Jordan? And I was all that.
Jordan. Oh, well, the reason was that Saffron and I were there was because Jordan was going out with Rachel. I'm pretty certain. Lovely Rachel. She's a lovely girl. But that's when we first met. That's right. There was somewhere where it was like a birthday party or something we were at, and we were all, yes.
Isn't that? And I remember we got on like a house.
Yes, we did. Both. Yes, that's right.
He laughed all night, I think. That's my memory.
Yeah,
that's
totally.
My memory,
yeah.
That you and I laughed the whole bloody night.
Yes. So funny. I was talking today about how important. Like, we're talking about mental health and just about how actually the act of laughing is such a good thing for your body, sort of release of stuff. And, you know, it's obviously you're happy and that's why you're doing it. But it's like this, it's a physical thing, a physical sort of manifestation.
I think it must
produce
endorphins.
It does.
Too, yes.
It does.
And it must, and because
I just think it's when you have fun with someone and laugh. It's so great. I was talking to my friend Monica today, and she did this podcast, and we laughed so much. That actually sometimes you can't hear what we're saying because we're just laughing like drains the entire time. We're going to have to turn down one of our mics to actually hear what we're talking about.
It's so great when that happens. It's uncontrollable joy.
Yeah, yeah.
Uncontrollable laughter. Oh, my God. I did, you know, I watched, I did RuPaul, you know, I shouldn't say that. You're not supposed to announce it. But anyway.
Oh, the Drag Race. Oh, it'll be out. This will be out before you, before this comes out.
So, I was saying to, I think it may have been Graham. It was Graham Norton the other day. And I said to him, I am not crazy for reality television. I really don't like it. He said, well, what would you call RuPaul? Because I said how much I love it. Oh, I said, that's not reality television. That's entertainment. That's just joyous fun.
That's good.
And that's why... It is so fun during COVID, with the lockdowns.
Yeah.
It just made people laugh. It was smiley. It was just so much fun.
A couple of years ago at the Edinburgh Festival, I did a club coming party, you know, to sort of close the Edinburgh International Festival. And I had this idea that I, you know, they sort of prepared it. I just flew in for the one night, but there was a guy helping me out. And I said, try and get as many drag queens from all around the world who are all performing in Edinburgh, all to come down at like, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning once all their shows are done. And we had this international drag queen parade. And it was just the most hilarious thing. I was going, and now Bratislava, you know, and this girl would come out. And now Australia. It was just fantastic.
And we won. The Scottish entry
that
won.
Lovely boy.
Lawrence Cheney. And I love the way Rue would say, Lawrence Cheney. He was trying to say it with a Glasgow accent. And it was great. I love Lawrence Cheney. And from word one, I thought, I think he's going to win.
Really? I just think he's so... I've just seen clips of him. What a darling. What a lovely heart. And sort of this great...
The other Scottish boy, they were all brilliant, actually. Yeah. I couldn't get over it. And I was hoping I'd be on with Lawrence Cheney, but I wasn't. So I love him.
And also, Lawrence Cheney sounds like, it sounded Lon Chaney was that sort of horror film star,
very famous
star, wasn't he?
Actor, yeah, he was.
Lulu, thank you so much for doing this. And I've just loved this little trip down memory lane. And honestly, this picture, this record of I'm a Tiger, it's very precious to me. And I, it's been so lovely to be able to sort of share all that with you. And, you know, thanks for coming on and
that's really cute.
Being so lovely. So,
well, it's just a pleasure. And it's also a pleasure to talk to someone who is not going to ask me the same old things.
Oh, that's good.
So,
oh, thanks.
Yes. Uh-huh. I'm sure you find that too.
Please.
But I definitely want to do your Saturday night cabaret. Well,
Saturday night on Broadway.
But maybe we should do a duet. I mean, didn't that Guys and Dolls have "I've never been in love before"?
Da, da,
is that a duet?
Da, da, da. I think so. I've never been in love. I can't remember.
We could do something like that, or we could do something more fun.
It
would be fun. Let's do something.
I'd love that. Oh my
just
God.
For the laugh.
Let's
just for
do
a laugh.
Duet. Let's do a duet. That'd be so great.
Let's
oh my God.
Laugh.
All right, my darling. Well,
love you.
It's so great to talk to you, Anya. It's just so great to feel your spirit all the way across the
world.
Oh, and
by the way, I must say again, your book, my whole family have read it. And everybody just, you're such a good writer.
Well, thank you. I have another one coming out.
Got
another one coming out later this year.
Yes, you told me we'll be buying that too.
plug.
God bless.
You too. Thanks, Lulu. Well, I'm going over to my record player now to pop "I'm a Tiger" on and have a little dance to myself. I hope you've enjoyed this trip down memory lane with me and Lulu, and I hope you'll join me next time on Alan Cumming Shelves. Alan Cumming Shelves is hosted by me, Alan Cumming, and produced by the lovely Jack Claremont. We are part of the Acast Creator Network and the Crowd Network too. We just love networks. Another Crowd Network podcast to check out is The Joe Marler Show. Joe is an England rugby player, but here's the catch. His guests are normal people doing normal jobs. He's meeting teachers, chefs, stuntwomen, tattoo artists, marine biologists, astronauts, and soldiers. And he's asking all the questions you or I would ask. It's as simple as that, but it's also charming because everyone is interesting if you ask the right questions. Just search for The Joe Marler Show in your podcast app.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.